The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Everybody, Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Ray Allen on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our show. You know, Ray, it seems like every monsoon or summer thunderstorm season, we get one of these days, don't we? Where we actually have a mid-morning rain. Kind of nice. Usually happens once or twice, and today is the day. So we'll see how that progresses with afternoon thunderstorms. All that cloud cover could kind of keep things suppressed a bit. It is our midweek edition here on the Buckmaster Show, and mid-August is with us, August the 15th, 2018. Hope the week has gone pretty well for you. We're on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. Have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and KVOI.com. 790-2040 is our live line number. There is a recently published red light camera study from Case Western Reserve University that shows statistically insignificant safety benefits and a very small safety improvement after the removal of the cameras. It's interesting that this information comes from Houston, Texas, where the city voters voted out the red light cameras, similarly to our vote here in Tucson. Mark Spear, systems engineer, photo enforcement researcher, is with me in studio, and Mark was pretty much leading the charge with John Kromko in that 2015 vote with their organization, Tucson Traffic Justice. Mark, how are you?
Oh, just fine today, Bill.
Tell me a little bit about, does this validate the vote that came down in Tucson?
Right. I think it's exactly that. It validates all the different parts of the story that we had been presenting. Many people who, you know, haven't followed this the whole time don't know that I've been looking at this for over 10 years. I started in 2007 when they were coming in Tucson. And we looked at things very openly at the beginning, just very, very openly to see, well, is this good? Is it bad? Is it, you know, going to help us? What are the benefits? What are the risks? What are everything? And eventually the data just keeps piling up and piling up that the benefits are very, very small, if at all. Every study that I've seen that was semi-legitimate showed the benefits to be either a plus or a minus five, right in that area, and it averages out to be just about neutral on safety. And one of the big factors, and this study pointed it out too, is that you create rear end and other types of collisions because of the reaction to the fact that the cameras are there. And they actually did it in sort of a behavioral way as part of it and found out that most people, and, you know, we're probably all instinctively this way, fear the ticket more than actually fearing an accident that smashes our car. You know, I mean, realistically, you would think that the ticket you can get around and nobody's hurt afterwards, but they actually fear that ticket more than the possibility of the accident, and it turns out that way. A lot of rear-end collisions are created.
And Mark, Tucson has done away with the red light cameras, but I was checking Phoenix. They're still all over the place.
Still all over the place in Phoenix.
Because one of my Facebook friends said, well, they're gone in Tucson. It's no longer an issue. Excuse me, it's a big issue in Arizona.
That's correct, because people drive all over the state. And in fact, I just talked to somebody this morning who got one up in the Phoenix area.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's still an issue. We've tried a couple of times to do either one of two things in Arizona at the state level, either get rid of them completely or change the intersection definition, which puts a mute on them of somewhere in the probably 60% to 80%, because most of those tickets are generated in this so-called area that Arizona has defined between the place where you normally stop and the very edge of the intersection. And all the definitions have been changed nationwide, but Arizona will not go along with it at this particular time.
Money is involved here?
It sure seems like it's money.
The only consistent
reason to keep them is income. It really is. After you look at the data, this particular study here that we're talking about from Case Western, I think used 12 years of data. You don't have any sort of unusual circumstances for that. Although, in all of the studies, there are some peaks and valleys of unusual things. My analysis, which again is not in university level detail, but it's a pretty good gut feeling after 10 years, is that any benefits they saw in Tucson coincided with the recession and less traffic per intersection. Mm, okay. In addition to that, all of my interviews with people, which are like in the 300-400 range, all told me I don't go there anymore. Mm-hmm. And so that becomes a traffic reduction issue just on a personal and individual basis.
That was the case with me. I would avoid those intersections.
Right.
I'm doing it, I'm sure other people are doing the same thing.
So, oh, yeah. I've got what I call poster children for virtually everything. One of my favorites was a full colonel Air Force officer, mm-hmm. had been a safety officer, never had an incident in the aircraft, hadn't had a ticket in 40 years. He gets two at Tankerville and Grant. And so he just quit going there.
How about cell phones? This is something that some of our Facebook fans and friends are concerned about, that actually cell phone bans while driving are leading to more accidents because people are still checking, but they're doing it, hiding it just lower, and it's making it more dangerous.
Right, right. I mean, I'm a big believer that we shouldn't be doing head-down cell phone texting while you're driving. I mean, that's a pretty clear one. But the occasional use, and especially the speaking on the cell phone, is very common, been done for decades, and hasn't been really that much of an issue. I'm pretty sure that it's all because of the enforcement mechanism. You can't tell texting from talking in the first glance. Mm-hmm. And so that's why they've gone that way. I'm looking at some ways to, maybe separate this out a little better and get it in more reasonable modes. But I have seen that in another study that was insurance-based only. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they looked at the cell phone bans and only looked at insurance claims. That's really all they saw. So they weren't looking directly at anything, but they saw a 4% rise in insurance claims where they had banned cell phone use, which pretty clearly tells you that what was happening was they were doing it, but doing it more concealed and adding an additional risk. And so that's another one of these that's going to be complex on finding the exact solution on there. There's nothing bad about having hands-free or Bluetooth communication, especially with modern cars that have it built in. Nothing bad about that. We're only talking about, what is it that we need to enforce? And normally, if it was done on a secondary basis, then people would be much more comfortable rather than hiding from every possible glance.
How about these poles on the red light cameras? They're still at the intersections, aren't they?
Yes, they are. In fact, I stopped in just before this to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And evidently, the news media is getting a tremendous number of calls on why are these things still here?
Why are they still
here? Yeah, why are they still here, right?
Yeah, you just did an interview with K-Gun, right?
Yes, I just did a K-Gun interview on that.
Very subject.
On the very subject.
So why are they still
here? Why are they still there? Well, I have to say that when we first ended the red light camera program, I gave them, I think, probably a month or two or whatever, thinking that they're going to need to do some, planning and organizing. And then they started giving me answers that were kind of crazy-like almost. Like we were trying to think up a reason to keep them there. And theoretically, if you're not going to put cameras in them, there's no reason to have the camera shells there. Mm-hmm. They did take down the computer controller boxes in many places, and they did take stuff out. Mm-hmm. But, the only reasonable answer to somebody who's just a casual observer is, well, they're thinking about putting them back.
So they're not collecting data?
No, there's no data. They are inoperative, but the public can't tell that.
So they're thinking, well, maybe the public thinks, well, there might be data there, or they are thinking of putting them back,
and
which
so,
may be the latter. The latter.
Maybe the latter. But whatever they're thinking, it's generating confusion to the public. And you don't want people in an intersection confused about anything if you can help it. And so we're going to take this recent study, present it to the city council, and give them another chance here to do the right thing. So it's, like I say, it's very, very substantiating to our position that there was very little gain other than the fact that they were collecting lots and lots of money, mostly from people who didn't deserve it.
You know,
there's ways to check only the those who are very grossly in violation, but they can't make money doing it that way.
All right, Mark Spear, always a pleasure. Thank you very much,
Thanks
sir.
A lot, Bill.
Mona's Danish Bakery, our fine sponsor up at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner Steve gets up so early with his team of bakers, making sure all of those baked goods are ready for you now at lunch. Go by, have a sandwich. The bread will be outstanding, I guarantee it. And, of course, the Danish Kringles are... Mark, you know what a Danish Kringle is, don't you?
I've probably seen one, but I don't know if I can
identify it. You think you may have. If you saw one, you probably would want to eat.
I would probably want one.
There you go. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Go to my website. It's buckmastershow.com. A link to Mona's and all of our great sponsors. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With six airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques? It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Thursday during the noon hour as we talk with Pima County Transportation Director Anna Olivares. Also, a newsmaker interview with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Buckmaster noon to 1 on Tucson's Voice AM 1030 KVOI. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition. Historian Ken Scoville, one of our fine contributors. We have 24 contributors to this program. All their bios are up at buckmastershow.com, and Ken visits with us every month or every other month or something like that. And certainly we always get him here before Tucson's birthday celebration. Ken, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm just amazed how quickly the birthdays roll around.
Roll around again. This one's 243, and Tucson's official birthday is on August the 20th, which is next Monday, really.
Right.
But we're not birthday. We're talking about kind of the European settlement. Of
right.
Tucson.
That's when we formally established a Spanish fort or presidio at a location downtown that most everybody's familiar with, and we have a wonderful presidio museum. But people, I think the bigger perspective is we're celebrating about 4,000 years of people living along the Santa Cruz River, and also we're celebrating water in the desert because Tucson would not have got on the map if there wasn't surface water.
Ken, what are you doing? You've got a couple of events coming up. Starting the celebration for the birthday will begin actually at high noon Sunday, right?
Right, on the 19th at the train station. Mm-hmm. And the train depot and the train museum always try and do events. It's going to be just sort of getting the people into the birthday mode. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the founding of Tucson and the, some of the changes that have gone on over the last 243 years, mainly looking a little bit at water and transport modes of transportation.
The historic Amtrak Tucson Train Depot. Do you like that restoration?
Well, I'm sort of biased because I was on the Citizens Advisory Committee maybe 20 years deciding what era we should interpret the depot at because there have been a lot of changes. It was originally built in 1907.
Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be on August the 19th at noon, and right. A lot of activities going on at the historic Amtrak Tucson Train Depot. Then the official birthday celebration will be on August the 20th, and
right.
You're going to be also be taking part in that.
Right. I'm actually going to do, I think people are always a little curious. So at 7:30, if there's some people that are not pooped out, I'm going to walk around where all four corners of the Presidio were, and still we've done archaeology, so we verified that, and talk about some of the changes that have got along within the Presidio. Realizing one thing I think is fascinating, we have not really moved our location of government since this Presidio was established.
Wow.
It's been in that location. Whether it's the current city hall, earlier city halls, Pima County government, when this was part of Mexico and part of Spain. It's all been in the same spot.
Now, as I recall, we used to do kind of a morning celebration, right? Now, that has been changed from 5 to 7:30 in the evening.
Right. In fact, because I've been around a while now, I didn't know it'd be.
I know.
It used to be in Vente de Agosto Bark, the
right.
little green grass island. We'd raise the flags up of all the flags that have flown
and
over.
And that
Tucson.
Became a little controversial because one of the flags was the
Confederate
flag of the Confederate nation. Yeah, Confederate states.
And that's only gotten a little more controversial, at least even in Tucson in the last couple of years. But yes, we were part of the Confederacy, and we made a grand stand, and a lot of our citizens at the time said we'd rather ride out of town in the desert and face the Apaches rather than have this. And it lasted for 3 months, and then the Union soldiers came in, and that's over.
So we have a really nice new Presidio Museum now, don't we?
We have a wonderful Presidio Museum, which then became another location, used to actually be in the courtyard of the Pima County Courthouse. I know all of them.
Uh-huh.
Then we went to the Presidio Museum, but still would be a little warmish. Again, we can blame Hugo O'Connor.
Oh, that
Irishman for picking August 20th rather than a nice cool month.
The Irishman working as a mercenary for
yes,
the Spanish crown.
Yes, and essentially establishing Presidio sites, fort sites.
Uh-huh.
But this year we're going to meet at Old Town Artisans where we have some shade and we're going to have music and make it much more, I think, a user-friendly celebration from 6 to 7:30 in the evening.
And your tour then is a one-hour tour.
Beginning at 7:30.
Oh, good. A sensible hour where it's...
Right. It'll be a little, and we'll just walk around, and I will tell you some of the good and the bad and the ugly about what's gone on in the Presidio site.
This is not really having to do with Tucson's birthday, but this is the first time I've really had a chance to talk to you about the monastery, the Benedictine monastery. Are you pleased the way that is moving forward?
Well, it's interesting how you see different momentums going. Obviously, preservation and realizing what a landmark and what an important thing is, it's ongoing. Today's paper I just picked up this morning, Mission Gardens is now helping to transplant and graft the trees and some of the orchard work. So that just shows you everybody's thinking from a conservation and preservation standpoint. Mm-hmm. The heights of the apartment buildings have been lowered. We're going to have some kind of usage that will allow public access into the building. So I would have to say Mr. Kosacik and I really stepped up on this one. And I would also have to say, as Mr. Rowley, the developer, it's actually working out quite well, more than I would have ever thought.
And some of these trees will be moved to to the Mission Gardens,
right,
which is a great project, and you made a great suggestion. We need to get those people on the program.
Very quietly, they are replanting at the same location where when we used to have a mission there and when the Presidio was going, that now, and I think it's really good that we've gone 4,000 years and all the changes in Tucson, and you walk over there and we're doing what we did thousands of years ago. We're planting the original orchard trees, the other things of the desert, and also some other interpretive gardens. So we're going back to our agricultural heritage.
Of course, we've talked about this before. The train coming to Tucson is really kind of the game changer, and it's always interesting to reflect about, I wish there had been some historic picture of that event, but it didn't happen.
No, not at all, but it did bring fashion and tremendous change to Tucson like any community. In fact, I'll just tell you one of the examples of the pressure of fashion. Old Town Artisans, if you look in some of the rooms to the ceiling, you see the swirl ribs and the vigas of the traditional construction. Then there's Victorian wallpaper up on the walls where everybody wanted to be fashionable, even though they had a house built out of mud and with the swirl rib ceiling. So that pressure of fashion's with us even to this moment today.
And you have been really following as a historian. You've been following the mistakes and some of the things where we really went wrong, probably Elkhorn. Tearing down the Elkhorn Conquistador was a huge problem.
Right.
Mistake. Yeah.
Well, but like everything else in this world, we sometimes get smart too late.
Uh-huh.
So you're seeing a greater standing up for preservation, not so much from the University of Arizona as how they really went north of Speedway and destroying a neighborhood that was supposed to be saved. So that's the one black mark for me personally right now. But otherwise, I think the city's doing a better job. The county's doing a good job.
And so as you reflect on this birthday, what really, you are mentioning 4,000 years of heritage here, and it really all boils down to water, doesn't it?
Boils down to water, and also, given everything is going on in the world today, a wonderful melding of different cultures. And everybody came in here at one time. Everybody was an immigrant or coming from someplace else in Tucson, if you go back to the native people and all the other Europeans in Mexico and all that. It's a place where there's a great melding pot where you can really enjoy culture and what it is to live on the desert.
And it really makes us different than Phoenix.
Oh, gosh. It's just amazing because I actually grew up in Phoenix.
Yeah.
That commute up to Phoenix, it's like Iowa in the desert.
Uh-huh.
It's just not the same place. And that's why I always joke to people, I tell them when they ask me where I'm from, I'm a Phoenix refugee. So,
and you got to wonder about Phoenix with the water, and they're still doing the watering of the lawns.
Yes, but they're in still better shape. The Salt River Project, when they did all the dams at the turn of the 20th century, and the CAP, and all those things. But they're going to be at another probably 2 million people in Phoenix.
All right, let's quickly summarize the activities that are coming up, and they begin Sunday, August the 19th. Which is this coming Sunday at High Noon, presented by our friends at the Southern Arizona Transportation Museum. They've done really a great job over there, a lot of dedicated volunteers. Historian Ken Scoville, that's you. You'll be giving a talk.
Short talk.
And what time do you think your talk will get? A little around, just afternoon?
Yeah, 12:15, 12:20 probably. We'll see.
Okay, and then the main event not that this won't be a great event.
No,
but
it's a nice lead-in and
nice
introduction
lead in, yeah,
to
the downtown, the birthday celebration, as Tucson marks 243 years, and that will be August the 20th, Monday, and this is a much more sensible suggestion and time than in previous years,
right,
in the morning. So this is 5 to 7:30.
I think it's actually 6 to 7.
Oh, is it 6 to 7:30? Well, if you get there at 5, it won't be the end of the world.
No, you're right.
Yeah,
now, they're 5 to 7:30.
5 o'clock, and it will be hosted by the Tucson Pima County Historic Commission. Celebration to be held at La Cocina Restaurant.
Old Town Artisans.
Old Town Artisans. And then your talk will be at...
Oh, I'm actually doing a walk and a talk at 7:30 in the evening. If people want to know more about the Presidio site, we're doing a free walk around all four corners of the Presidio.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ken. It's always a pleasure to see you. Coming up now at 12:30 on the Buckmaster Show, we have lots to talk about with David Safir of TucsonWeekly.com. A lot of education topics on the table. That's coming up next. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Experience the new era of Arizona football. New coach Kevin Sumlin, lower season and individual game ticket pricing, new stadium amenities and concession options, more pride of Arizona, and a new stadium announcer. Plus, explosive plays on the field that will create lots more fireworks. Go to ArizonaWildcats.com/FB for tickets or call 621-CATS. That's ArizonaWildcats.com/FB or 520-621-CATS.
In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. This portion of the program presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There is a complete list there of the great places to stay. And there are so many things to do over in Silver City in Grant County, like the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument, the Gila National Forest, doing hiking, camping. It's just a great opportunity to really get away in a place that's very different, historic Silver City. And again, it is southwestnewmexico.org for the place to begin your trip over to Southwest New Mexico. Let's welcome David Sefier. David writes at TucsonWeekly.com under their online section called The Range. It's called that because the topics do range from A to Z. David, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thank you.
What is this about $56 million in child care that was supposed to be allocated by the legislature but was not?
In a word, Bill, it's a head-scratcher. It's just the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. Bad, bizarre in a bad sense, but it is bizarre. So let me tell you the situation. By the way, any listeners here who read the Daily Star, if you look at Fitz's cartoon today, Fitz's cartoon has a big fat cat legislator sitting on a money bag with $56 million written on it, and a woman with her child on the other side not getting any of this money. So here's the story. When the federal government created its budget, it put in a new $5.2 billion, billion with a B, for improving the subsidies for child care and the quality of child care for low-income families all over the country. And of that money, $56 million of it went to Arizona. So Arizona has $56 million new to spend for subsidies for kids from low-income families so they can go to child care, early childhood education, things of that nature. For some reason, the Republicans, and I am going to say it was Republicans, and Governor Ducey said, let's not put that in the budget.
Why the heck not?
Let's just take that money. Let's put it under the table. They can spend it for 3 years. It's not going to go away. It's going to be theirs. But why the heck not is a good question. And let me tell you how crazy it is. Right now, there's a problem with, we have a very, very low ratio of kids being in child care and early childhood development next to other states. But we also pay less in our subsidies than almost any state. You know, when your kid goes to the school, the state pays the money if the child can't afford it. Well, we have a set rate for how much is paid, and the set rate, Bill, is based on 2000 money from the year 2000, 18 years old. So their rates are nothing like what it costs for the providers to give the kids the child care they need. I mean, if you think about it, I look back. The minimum wage in 2000 was $5.15 an hour, and now it's $10.50. That's the difference. That's double, and yet we're giving them, actually not even the rate from the year 2000, 75% of the rate from the year 2000. So what's happening is providers literally are shutting their doors. They say, we can't give you a service that costs us money because we don't get enough money. And you know how public schools can't close their doors. So public schools put 30 kids in the classroom, there's not enough money, and then 35 and 40 kids. And they do that and they economize somehow. Well, there are laws about childcare. You can't have more than a certain number of toddlers per adult. So they can't throw in two or three more toddlers. And so consequently, according to the Star, which is where this information came out first, and then I talked to some other people, they have closed just hundreds of providers around the state, including, I think, 80 or 90 in the Tucson area. It's ridiculous. And again, why didn't they put the money in the budget with not a penny from the state? I talked to a couple of people who should really know about this, and both of them said, we don't understand it.
Well, could it be that it's, quote, federal money and Republican lawmakers have some kind of an aversion to taking any federal funds?
Well, yeah.
Is that kind of what might
be their cause there?
They're already taking federal funds because we already get $125 million for this. So the $56 million is on top of that. But I think, you know, to be as cynical as I can be about this, they don't like quote-unquote giveaways to people who don't have money. They don't very much like preschool education. And since all this money goes to low-income people, I honestly think that among Republicans, they think if some of our wealthy supporters don't get a cut of it, at least a cut of it, we're not going to spend it. And that's very cynical of me, but I can't think of a reason. And I talked to Representative Randy Fries, who's from my legislative district, and he said he was in the Appropriations Committee before the budget, and he got wind of this. And he basically said to the chair of the Appropriations Committee, or Republican David Livingston, he said, are we going to put this, can we put this $56 million in the budget? And Mr. Livingston said, we're not planning to allocate it. And Randy Fries said, why? And he simply wasn't answered. Livingston went on to something else.
Where did the money go? Did it go into the budget or no?
No, it didn't. And
where's the money?
Well, the money is basically sitting in somewhere in the accounting. You
state bank account.
It's either the state bank account or maybe they haven't drawn it from the feds. But they get to keep it for 3 years, as I said. So it's not like the money is going to go away. But I was talking to Michelle Crow, who is the Southern Arizona head of the Children's Action Alliance, and she said, you know, they take kids away from parents all the time, social services does, and one of the reasons they take kids away is for neglect. The parents are neglectful, and one of the main reasons that happens is these parents have no place to put their kids. They have no child care. So can the parent work? Can the parent go to school? Can the parent do things that are other than constant 24/7 childcare? The answer is no. So by denying this kind of money, we're literally hurting families, not to mention the parents can't work, not to mention the kids aren't getting that boost they need before they get into kindergarten. And honestly, if I had any say, every Republican legislator running for office and Governor Ducey, who's also running for office, would be asked the question, why didn't you put that $56 million in? And Bill, they have one answer. They do. Well, we hadn't figured out how to use it yet. We hadn't planned for it yet. Mm-hmm. Most ridiculous answer I've ever heard. You put it in as a line item. You know that it can only be spent for improving the quality of childcare and early childhood education. And after it's in there, then you make the specific. And if you have to be more specific than that, listen, I'm a teacher. Occasionally $1,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 will come our way in the way of a grant if we write up a purpose for it. I guarantee within 24 hours we have a plan written out, because if you want the money, you do the work. They didn't want the money.
All right, David, I've got a couple more topics that I want to entertain with you, and let's see if we can work this one in before we take the break, because I do want to talk about the whole Red for Ed and that initiative, but we'll do that after the break. But right now I want to talk about Arizona has the worst counselor-to-student ratio in the United States. I couldn't believe this. I thought, it's got to be a misprint. 941 students to one counselor.
Right. And it's apparently that was the worst at the actual bottom of the recession. It's come better. But better means it's at around 750 or 800. Now, when people think about money for schools, first, we're thinking a lot about teachers' salaries, because we know improving that will improve the number of teachers who are coming in. We've got shortages. But when you think about money being allocated, I taught at a high school with about 1,000, 1,200 kids. I was counting as I was driving down here, we had four counselors and we had a head counselor who was in charge of the whole thing. Well, that meant that if a kid had a horrible problem coming in that day, a horrible day with their family or just a teenage problem, they could find a time during that day to go to that counselor. If the kid had a drug problem, if they had a serious emotional problem where they were on the verge of a breakdown or doing something rash.
Suicidal, anything.
That kind of thing happens, yes, all the time. Mm-hmm. I remember one case where I had a young woman in my class who wrote something that they just scared the bejesus out of me. And I went down to her counselor literally after my class was over. I was late to my next class. I had to tell her. And the counselor said, oh, poor dear. Yeah, I know about this. I've talked to the parents. And we sit down once every 2 weeks and talk. So this counselor lovely woman, was on top of this. But what if you have one counselor for 900 people? Mm-mm. And one other thing that comes up, and it's just hugely important. A lot of kids in high school don't have any contact with anyone who's ever gone to college. And some of these kids are bright enough and they're ambitious enough, they want to go to college. The counselor is a person who says, listen, Jill, or listen, John, here's what you can do. Here's how it works. Here's how you get money if you need it. Here are the options. Here's where you can go with it. And this is the first time these kids have ever heard of it. Well, if you have one counselor for 900 students, any number of students who potentially can make their lives better and make themselves better and make the state better just simply don't know the opportunities they have.
And again, we are then the worst. That ratio is the worst in the country?
Yes, that's right. The ratio that is ideal is 250. I think the average is something like 400 around the country or something. So it's not what it should be. But still, we're double that ratio, and it's terrible. I know what good counselors do. I depended on them as a teacher, and the students depended on them. Too. It's just awful not
having
them.
And this, again, gets back to economics?
Of course. Right. Of course. It costs money. Listen, if you need only have a certain amount of money, you cut where you can. So you cut support services and counselor support services. Are you going to cut a counselor or are you going to cut a teacher? And that's the problem. Or a librarian. How many of our schools don't have librarians? And anybody, you and I are both readers. We know how important libraries are, just getting kids seeing books and having them in their hand and being read to. Those are the things librarians do, and schools don't have them.
All right, we'll take our break right here, 12:45 on the Buckmaster Show. If there's something that David said that has elicited a response on your part, you can join our conversation, 790-2040. We'll be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in T-U-S. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm so excited about what's going on over at Green Things. It's not just a place anymore where you go to get all of your nursery things taken care of for the garden, things being anything that's green that grows. Now it is also a place for great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America and Europe. Zocalo, which for years was over at Country Club in Broadway, not exactly at the intersection, but in that vicinity, they're now on the 13-acre site of Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River and just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Check out Green Things now for all of your gardening needs and great merchandise from Zocalo. GreenThingsAZ.com is the website. David Safir is with us. We're talking about education. David writes for the TucsonWeekly.com under their section called The Range. David, there's a piece by Howard Fisher from Capital Media Services saying there's some controversy over, well, there is a challenge to putting the Arizona initiative to tax wealthier Arizonans for education. It's being challenged in court.
Right. And the surprise would be if it wasn't challenged in court. Excuse me. Because any number of people who are either billionaires like the Koch brothers or people who make a great deal of money or the Chamber of Commerce or any people like that are going to object to something that's going to charge more taxes for people over $500,000 if you're a couple, or over $1 million. It goes up a little bit more. And so for sure, they're going to challenge it in court. Now, I hate to diminish what they're doing because they've got smart lawyers, but I think what they're doing is going on a fishing expedition, and I think the judge, Judge Smith, is going to shut them down. For instance, I'm going to ask you a math question because I don't know the answer to
it.
Do you know the difference between percent and percentage?
I do not. I thought that they were interchangeable.
Well, in fact, they're used. I learned this from the article. I didn't know it before. I learned that they're used interchangeably now, but they actually have different mathematical meanings. And what the lawyer is saying is you deluded the people who signed your petition because you said percent when you meant percentage.
Oh.
And everybody is going to be really?
Yeah.
Really, Bill?
Yeah.
So, and the judge kind of said, oh, come on. And they said, well, listen, we did a survey of this. And the judge said, did you include some other pieces? Well, we didn't include that in the survey. And they brought a math teacher in. The math teacher explained to the judge, there is a difference between percent and percentage. And then the judge said to the math teacher, but are the two used interchangeably usually? And the guy said, well, yeah. So, Bill, we both flunked percent versus percentage. I'm sorry.
Well, I didn't do that well in math. But let's go to Matthew, who has called us at 790-2040. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, guys. Speaking of percent versus percentage, then, what percent do you believe of the statistic that took us to the worst in the nation is because charter schools have less counselors than public schools? Do you think that's a higher percentage of the problem? Because I suspect if a CEO of a charter school wants his bonus, he's going to have as few counselors as possible. But again, that's just I'm just curious. Thanks.
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't have any idea, and it wasn't mentioned in the article. But if you do find the article, and it was in the Arizona Republic, so you'd have to Google it probably if you don't get the Republic, and then you could read it there. It did cite certain school districts, and it cited schools having a 400-to-1 ratio or a 375 or a 600-to-1 ratio or something like that in regular school districts. I don't know how it works in charter schools, but often they'll have like either the principal or headmaster, whatever it's called, or one of the teachers will have one or two periods of counseling. So I don't know for sure. But I guarantee that that isn't the be-all and end-all because our schools don't have enough counselors. I talked in the article about a high school, which, you know, really need counselors. We've got these teenagers who are going through all kinds of personal issues and, you know, growing up and graduating soon. Some of the high schools have to share their counselors with the local elementary schools, just like they have to sometimes share the nurse. Woe be to you if you need a nurse on Thursday when your nurse is at the school on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And that's the situation we're in. No matter how you slice it, there's not enough money to provide the education or the services that kids need in our Arizona schools simply because we starve them, because we spend so little.
And for those that were just tuning in, that was a segment we talked about in the first segment with David Safir about Arizona having the worst counselor to student ratio in the country, and that ratio is 941-to-1. David, you said it's a little better right now.
It doesn't say exactly what it is, but okay. It said that was at the low of the recession, okay. I don't know, 2010 or whenever it was, and that we've come a bit up, but we're still I think we still are the lowest in the country. And I'm so tired of having the least money for reimbursement for child care subsidies and the highest number of students in the class and the least number that spend per student. We are number one or number 51, whichever way you want to count it, in just too many areas, Bill. And even if you compare it to states which have similar economics to us, I'm not comparing us to Massachusetts. I'm comparing us to southern and midwestern states and southwestern states who are in similar economic situations as us, and most of them spend significantly more. The South, southern states, have gotten their act together and have really increased their funding for education in ways that have just pulled them way ahead of us while they used to be in the same place as us. There's something very, very, very wrong about the way the state allocates the money. And everybody out there who's listening, we've got an election coming up. Mm-hmm. Elections have consequences.
How about some good news here to end out our segment?
Okay.
The exodus from Puerto Rico, of course, during the hurricane, left a lot of the infrastructure on the island really in shambles. Well, teachers are considering leaving the island and coming to Arizona, where we have a teacher shortage.
That's true. But just remember that people are go there and recruiting from all over the country. So they have lots of places to choose from.
They have 49 other choices, 50 other choices.
But these are people who are English speakers. They're mm-hmm. already citizens. So unlike, you know, some people, if you read, Vail has pulled in and other people have pulled in teachers from Indonesia and all over the place. But with them, there are visa requirements and returning to their country. If you're in Puerto Rico, you're in your country. When mm-hmm. you're in the Arizona, you're a citizen. You speak English, but you're also bilingual, which bilingual
very
is
helpful
great
in our state.
In this state. Mm-hmm. So there are ups and downs to recruiting people from other countries. But the great up about it, the great positive about it is, if students see people from other countries, as opposed to thinking about these weird, strange people from elsewhere, you find, geez, these people have different customs, but my God, they're nice. My gosh, they're intelligent. This person's really helping me with my math or with my science or something like that. And all of a sudden, some of people's biases that come just from ignorance can fall away. And that could be a great, what is it called, unintended consequence of our teacher shortage, that we'll be bringing in interesting people from elsewhere to change the make it more heterogeneous.
Of course,
population.
Puerto Rico is a commonwealth of the United States, and as you accurately point out, people that live there are citizens of the United States. They had to close, David, more than 280 schools that still have not opened in Puerto Rico after
terrible.
The hurricane.
They just 2 days ago or yesterday, they just got the last light on after all this time.
Jeez.
Can you imagine a single city in the continental United States where anyone would allow the lights to be off for some 300-plus days, no, 9 months. But
it's really horrible.
No, there's been. We were going to end on a happy note, Bill.
Yeah,
the happy note is we can get ourselves some more teachers, and they could be very interesting people, and we'd love to see that. Boy, we need more, lots of more different people in this state to make this state healthier and wealthier and all the kinds of things it can be.
All right, David, we will look for your work at TucsonWeekly.com under their section called The Range. And it's pretty much all of your work is archived there under media or education,
well,
right?
Absolutely. If anybody goes to any of my works and clicks on my name, David Safir, that'll take you to a link which has 20 or 30 or 40 pages full of various things I've written, from the first thing I wrote up to what I just put on this morning at 10 o'clock.
The comments, are they still there as well?
Yeah, yeah. So anybody who wants to entertain
why'd
themselves.
Why'd you have to bring that up, Bill? Go, huh, right?
Oh, no, listen, they're enjoyable. Cool. Go to the comments section.
It's cool. All right. David Safir, thank you very much,
thank
David.
You, Bill.
Coming up this afternoon, Mike Shaw and Ray Allen getting together with Mike Check from 4 to 6, then Wake Up Tucson tomorrow morning, 6 to 9. Me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you. We'll speak with Pima County's transportation director, among other interviews that are planned for us. We'll be there with you at 12:04 tomorrow. Until then, on behalf of my friend Ray Allen on the other side of the glass and David Safir with me in studio, we hope you have a great afternoon and evening.